I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and this is Up to Date. Now showing on area screens, an ensemble of some of England's finest actors, a satire on contemporary American culture, the relationship between the newly elected Pope and his therapist. These are just some of the offerings in independent, documentary, and foreign films our critics will review today. We'll get you up to date on the newest movies that make you think after this hour's news. Up to date, I'm Steve Kraske. Since when has a film about a group of retirees hanging out at a hotel in India been a movie that people have been waiting for? Well, since that movie stars Maggie Smith and Judi Dench, that's when. Their new film, Best Exotic Marigold Hotel, has been previewed in town for months, but it's finally open, and we'll get a review today from our expert panel. Our movie critics today are Cynthia Haynes, the film professor. Cynthia, always good to have you.
Thank you very much, Steve.
KCUR's own Steve Walker is back. Steven.
I am. Thanks.
And Bob Butler, who works at the Kansas City, Missouri Public Library and whose movie reviews you can see for yourself at butlerscinemascene.com. Bob, how are you?
Bonjour, mon ami.
Yes. We'll get to Best Exotic Marigold Hotel in just a few minutes. But first up, the subject of the new documentary Hit So Hard, the life and near-death story of Patty Schemmel joins us now. Nice to have you, Patty. Good morning.
Hi. Good morning.
Patty was a drummer for Courtney Love's rock band Hole and survived years of drug abuse to become a healthy and happy woman, or at least that's what the film tells us. Steve Walker, set the film up for us just a little bit here.
Hi, Patty.
Hi, good morning.
Hi. I just have to say first, live through this. Hole's masterpieces on my CDs to a desert island.
Oh, I love that.
So I'm thrilled to talk to you. Just to set it up, you were the drummer for Hole in the early 90s.
Right.
During the whole Pacific Northwest, Seattle, kind of Portland scene,
yeah,
where the bands were Nirvana, Pearl Jam, and Hole. Would you say that's accurate?
You know, there was quite a bit more than that, but it's nice to be included in that group of bands.
And you were filming all the time.
Yeah.
And hanging out with Cobain and Courtney and all of those people. And so this film kind of documents the start of Hole, but also your personal journey, which is so moving.
Yeah. I decided to start filming because I got this camera for Christmas, and I knew I had this sort of foresight that I didn't think that I would be able to remember those times at the time. So I thought I would document them, and so I used the camera and just filmed everything I could and all of our shows, and then, you know, just backstage at festivals and I thought I would just bring home all the footage and look at it someday, you know, and just keep it in my closet for a while. And I never thought it would ever become a film, you know. So it's pretty amazing that I actually hung on to it and, you know, we created the film, which is cool.
Patty, yeah. This is Bob Butler. I'm another one of the panelists. I'm kind of interested, when you finally got a hold of this box of film and looked at it,
yeah,
was this some sort of revelation? Did you remember things? Was this all out of the blue for you?
Yeah, some of it I remembered, and other stuff, you know, I didn't. And you know, the funny part was that some of the footage, you know, the camera got passed around a lot from guys in the crew filming shows or other bands, you know, would come by and someone would hand them the camera, and then they'd film something in their backstage area or, you know. So there was stuff that I'd barely even saw the first time around, you know, because I didn't shoot it, you know. So that was kind of cool to kind of look at all that. And then just a lot of some amazing crowd footage of just, you know, 70,000 people It's amazing stuff.
Well, so Patty, what was it like for you going back and looking at this film? I assume a number of years had passed. Did you sit back one day and just sort of let it all wash over you again?
It was sort of in little pieces. We were digitizing all the footage to preserve it, and then every day I would go and I was doing it at David, the director's house, and I'd go there every day, and we'd look at, you know, a few tapes a day, and there were over 40 hours of footage.
Wow.
So each day would take me back in time, you know, and then, so some days were heavier than others. Some days were, you know, funny, good time, you know, footage, and other days were really heavy, you know, troubled.
Well, I'm curious, from the perspective of someone who has been through what you've been through, did you ever see yourself during that period and go, oh my?
Yes. And I can remember, I can see it in my face, and I can remember some of the emotions around, you know, just being exhausted and confused and, you know, just out of my mind. Completely not on the earth. And, it was pretty, some of it was kind of scary to see, and other stuff was just sad, you know, like.
Cynthia Haynes, hop in here.
Patty, I'm just curious how you and David Ebersol connected, because it seems to me that he was probably one of the best people to put this footage together into a very entertaining, insightful documentary.
Yeah, he has been a friend for years through my wife, Christina, and he was the first person I went to for advice on how to preserve the footage and digitize it. And while we were in that process, he would ask me stories about what was going on, and he would ask me what was happening, and I would tell him the story behind it. And so he thought, this is a great story here that you have, and you have great footage. You should do something with it. So I, you know, thought about it and then went back to him, and he said he'd do it. And I asked him to do it, and he said he would. So, And he was a great choice, just that I trusted him. He was a friend of my family's, and he wouldn't exploit certain things. And I felt comfortable talking to him about some real personal stuff, which is in the film.
We're visiting with Patty Schemmel about her new documentary, Hit So Hard, The Life and Near-Death Story of Patty Schemmel. She was the drummer for Courtney Love's rock band Hole back in the 90s and survived a whole bunch of hard times to live today to talk about it. You know, Patty, the subtitle of this film is The Near-Death Story of Patty Schemmel. How close to death did you come?
Well, with my drug addiction, it took me all the way to losing everything and ending up on the street. So that was pretty close as close as I got. And you know, so many moments of, you know, overdose and, you know, lots of ODs, lots of scary, risky situations. And so that was talked about in the film as well. So that's where the near death.
Yeah. You know, Patty, a lot of folks may not recognize your name. They may not recognize the name of the rock band Hole, but they'll recognize Courtney Love's name. Describe her to us.
She's a pretty, you know, unpredictable person.
nice understatement.
Just put it lightly, and quite a force, and a brilliant, smart woman, and you know, she led our band through the tour and writing that record, and you know, extremely talented, but also there's some there's a dark side to her life as well, which we all, I can relate to, being a person in recovery and having dealt with addiction. And we shared that, whereas the other two members in my band were just what we would call, you know, your normal recreational drinkers. And so she and I shared our predilection for drugs.
You know, Patty, maybe a dumb question, but why such an obvious connection between rock and roll and drugs? What's the connection from your standpoint?
You know, I've always felt that, you know, since I was 11, before I ever picked up a drink, I wanted to be a drummer in a rock band. And it was just a natural progression to, you know, it's around, it just seems like, you know, it's playing rock and roll is such a rebellious thing, and it's such a you know, it's sort of the anti.
Yeah.
It just goes hand in hand. I can't really, you know, our hours are late night. It just goes together, you know, with the whole lifestyle. And it's perfect for a person who has a drug addiction already. You know, if you have a leaning towards drugs and alcohol, rock and roll is the job.
Well, you know, Patty, this is Bob Butler. There's a great story. I assume it's true that you declined to participate in an intervention for Kurt Cobain because you felt that it would have been hypocritical on your part, that you were so deep into it that it just, you know, I don't. First, is that true? And second, how do you view that sort of thing now? I mean, are you riding a white steed of virtue here, or how do you handle it?
It wasn't part of that intervention just because it's not my place to, you know, I of course wanted to support Kurt and help him in whatever he needed to do, but to make him, you know, be okay and feel better. But I don't believe that. And I had an intervention as well, and for myself, and it didn't. What it did for me was just pretty much distance me from everyone else. And also, you're not ready until you're ready to quit. And after my intervention, I didn't quit. You know, I just kind of did what everybody else was telling me to do, and then eventually went back to drinking, you know.
Patty, how much do you miss Kurt Cobain today?
I miss him, of course, I as far as the person and my friend, but also the music that... I would just love to know what he would have done musically today.
Yeah.
Patty, one interesting thing about the portrait of your substance abuse was two things, I think. One, you were first really using heavily when Hole was just getting famous and there was the world tours and all of that, and so everybody was on a real high anyway.
Right.
And then the next time you had a kind of a tailspin was after you were sort of inelegantly taken off the whole follow-up album,
right,
Celebrity Skin, at a real low. Do you see what I'm saying with that question?
Yeah.
Life's a natural high sometimes. Sometimes life's, you know, in the toilet, and you were using it both times.
Right. And I use drugs to celebrate. I use drugs to be miserable, you know. It didn't matter good times or bad times. I wanted to be checked out all the time. Hmm. You know, that was just my go-to place. You know, feelings of excitement were to be celebrated, and then feelings of insecurity and fear were to be, you know, blocked out, you know? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it wasn't so much... The idea of, you know, you had such a gift, and I know that, and I'm grateful, but also my go-to place is to be altered, you know.
Steve Walker, we have a clip from this documentary.
We
hit
do.
So hard.
We have a clip of Patty reminiscing about Kurt and Courtney and their new baby Francis, and Patty was there living sort of in the house with them all the time, and her recollecting that.
You know, I'd be around just to hang out with Francis and hang out with them. And there was lots of times when I'd, you know, go downstairs and there's this rocking chair that Courtney would sit in sometimes with Francis, and or Kurt would sit in it, and I would take Francis and just sit in that rocking chair and listen. Like, Kurt would always get these records in the mail, and so I'd put on this one song, this Beat Happening song called Godsend, and it's like a 4-minute song, and it's really sort of a lullaby, and I would listen to that over and over and over again with Francis, and she would fall asleep. I mean, Kurt was always, he was a really considerate person. I fell asleep on the couch, and in the morning the sun was kind of beating down through the window, and I woke up and he had taken down one of his paintings off the wall and propped it up against the window.
Hit So Hard, the life and near-death story of Patty Schemmel, opens when?
It opens next Friday at the Screenland Crossroads. It's of interest to rock historians, fans of those bands, but also as a journey of recovery and life-affirming work that she's doing now with Dogs.
Yeah.
Cynthia, do you recommend it?
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, 3 thumbs up from our critics here. Patty Schemmel, it's been a pleasure. Thanks for taking some time with us.
Thank you.
Hole playing in This World, right?
Right,
okay.
Right.
Let's move on with some other films that are opening today, as a matter of fact. And Cynthia Haynes, tell us about a film much awaited around here, Best Exotic Marigold Hotel.
Right, on the other extreme here.
Yes, very much so.
No less artistic.
Yes. Yeah. This is a charming film with some of Britain's best actors. It's about a group of pensioners who realize that they're going to have difficulty living in England on their retirement and are enticed to move to India, Jaipur, actually, by a brochure that was sent out by a very ambitious young man who's trying to turn this old hotel into a retirement community.
So what you're saying, this is probably in my future someday. I won't be able to afford living financially in America. I'll be going to India.
Well, it strikes a chord today, for sure. It was directed by John Madden, who did Shakespeare in Love. And if you like that film, I think you'll really like this movie also. But it also, you know, is a reflection on the fact that it isn't as deep, I think, as it could be, or as profound a film as it should be, because it basically was adapted from a novel by Deborah Mogach, I think her name is.
Looks good.
Yeah. It's basically a story about changes in one's life as you age. Hmm. And how to deal with them.
I've noticed a few lately.
Yeah, that's right. Well,
that's Monday on Up to Date. Yeah.
They're addressed by this stellar cast, and it's truly an ensemble piece. There are 7 central characters in here that share about 7 or 8 stories throughout the film.
Shot on location?
Shot on location in India, and most of the actors had never been there before, and especially not for this length of time.
And who are they? Cue them up for us.
Well, we've got wonderful Judy Dench, who plays a grieving widow.
Love her.
Maggie Smith, that plays a bitter woman in need of a hip replacement, and she can get it cheaper in India than she can. So this is, in a sense, it's outsourcing aging here to India. Penelope Wilton, who we all know as Matthew's mother on Downton Abbey, plays a very nasty, self-absorbed woman who hates her experience in India and can't wait to leave. And her frustrated husband is played by the wonderful Bill Nighy. Tom Wilkinson plays a judge who's looking to reunite with the love of his life. Ronald Pickup plays an aging Don Juan. There we're edging into that stereotypical area of dirty old men, which I didn't find all that amusing. Celia Imrie is a much-divorced woman on the prowl.
She's a dirty old woman, face it.
There you go. That's true. Dev Patel, the kid from Slumdog Millionaire, plays the hyperactive young man who's anxious to make his hotel a successful retirement community.
The joke here, of course, is that they show up and the place does not look like the brochure.
The brochure, as they say in the film.
It's overgrown. There's paint peeling. Some of the rooms do not have doors, it's about these people learning to deal with life on a much more basic level. Some do. some don't.
Right.
Now, this film has been previewed for months. I saw previews for this, I don't know, 4 or 5 months ago at the Tivoli, I think. What does it say about the movie-going audience, or what does it say about me that I've been looking forward to this film for a long time now?
Well,
aging actors, India, help me here.
Well, Britain's really hot again, thanks to Downton Abbey, thanks to the National Theatre of London's HD broadcast at the Tivoli. Adele is not ancient, but, I mean, she's certainly hugely successful, and it's just on our minds, I think. And we know that Dench and Smith, who are in their upper 70s,
are going to give you a good performance.
They did a play together about a decade ago that never crossed the pond, so to speak. It played in London, never came here. They were in a Room with a View together, but that was before Dench was really known. Mm-hmm. And so to see them together is just so much fun.
The director, John Madden, was on Charlie Rose yesterday, along with Judi Dench and Tom Wilkinson. And I think he was realizing as they're making this film, they wish they had more scenes together with these gals. But the way it was written, we weren't given that opportunity.
To address your question.
Please. I hope someone would.
I may offend someone, but I'm going to tell you that there is a huge market out there for the carefully crafted example of blue hair cinema.
I couldn't agree more, and I can't believe we don't see more of it these days.
Well, and every now and then, someone like Miramax or one of these people will do a movie that is clearly geared to 50 and over, starring some people with wrinkles. And if it's the right story, it will play and play and play. And I would not be surprised to find that the art houses have this thing on the screen come September.
They're going to do very well with this movie in Kansas City.
They will. Yeah. Madden referred to that audience as a neglected constituency.
It is. Yeah. I mean, I'm in my low 50s, okay? I, too, was more excited about this film than anything where anyone's wearing a cape or blows things up.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm looking forward to the new Dark Knight, too. But this, you've got this cast with over 350 years of top-notch acting talent from the theater, from Stratford, working together on screen. I don't care if it seems kind of lightweight. I forgave all of that just to watch all of them work.
That's going to be my main complaint, is that I feel that the resolution of all these little crises is a bit too pat, that, it's kind of simplistic and superficial. And
so what?
It got to me after a while, but I know for a lot of people, so what?
But Dench, for example, her character is she's been married to this gambler her whole life, never had a job in her life. He's dead. She goes to India, and she just sort of
blossoms.
Yeah, literally, looks. She gets younger on screen, and she gets this job working with a bunch of young people at an outsourcing,
and teaches them how to speak to older people on the telephone.
That's a great scene. That's a great scene.
And older Westerners too, because we all know you get that voice on the answer, on the call, and it's like, what do you mean your name is Herman?
And the film opens with a scene of Dench on the phone with when she's still in England. But it's a delightful
Why
film.
Do I love Judi Dench so much? I love Judi Dench.
Well, if you saw her on Charlie Rose, she's just adorable, A.
Yeah.
B, she is so smart. She's so good at everything she does. She's got this career that just is unparalleled, really, unless it's against Maggie Smith's career.
Yeah.
And I've seen Maggie on stage several times. I've only seen Dench once. And just what you see on screen, magnify that 10 times with the electricity of seeing her work on stage.
Cynthia, you like this film?
I did. And I walked out, just memorized this line, everything will turn out all right in the end. And if it's not all right, it's not the end.
So will this film make your 3 to see?
Yeah,
it made mine. Yeah.
Probably not for me, but...
But 2 of the 3, it will.
Yeah,
and you're saying,
absolutely.
So don't expect a real deep film here, but an enjoyable film.
Very superficial, but fun.
Nonetheless. Okay, let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation about the latest independent art and foreign films. We'll talk about God Bless America, Keyhole, and Damsels in Distress, and a whole bunch more. I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and you're listening to Up to Date on KCUR. I'm Murray. welcome back to Up to Date. I'm Steve Kraske. If you missed yesterday's visit with the book doctors and their recommendations for some great reading, you'll find their picks and Brian McTavish's weekend to-do list at kcur.org. And just as junk food can lead to obesity, junk information can lead to new forms of ignorance. Coming up Monday in the program, we'll talk about the information diet. Well, this hour we're visiting with our film critics, Cynthia Haynes, Steve Walker, and Bob Butler. And in my haste to get the break, I didn't play the clip from Best Exotic Marigold Hotel. Cynthia, set it up for us here real quick.
Well, Judy Dench's character has just gotten her job. She's talking with Tom Wilkinson's character, Bill Nighy, the frustrated gentleman with his frustrating wife, Penelope, joined the conversation.
Okay.
Good evening.
Please sit down.
Oh, thank you. I trust you had a good day.
I'd rather hear about yours.
I got a job. My first ever. I'm going to be a sort of cultural advisor.
A role I'm sure you'll perform with great distinction.
Perhaps you wouldn't mind keeping that to yourself.
Well, I'm flattered you told me about it. Good evening, the Ainsleys.
Did you have a good day?
Spectacular, actually. I went to the temple you told me about. A place of meditation and peace. It was quite stunning.
So spiritual, I bet you never noticed the smell of elephant dung.
No elephants, sadly. I thought I might see you there. Where did you get to instead?
Yes, where do you get to every day?
Well, I've just been telling Mrs. Greenslade all about it.
I'm sure she wouldn't mind hearing it again.
Oh, I talked to the chef for you. Absolutely no problem.
Did you hear that, Douglas? Plain grilled food, manna from heaven.
I don't have to have it too, do I?
I can't thank you enough.
Again, that's from the Best Exotic Marigold Hotel. I want to go back to a point you were making before, Bob. You know, I'll go see that movie because I don't want to see violence anymore. I can't handle it, don't want to see it when I pay money to be entertained. And I also don't want to be jarred around like a marble in an empty bottle, you know, by shaken up, you know, by some director who's taking me on a crazy ride in Batman or whatever.
Don't go to Keyhole.
Well, right, don't go to Keyhole. But, you know, I can't believe, you know, when I feel those kinds of things that I'm alone.
Oh, you're
and
not.
That's why I'm going to go see that film. I can't believe there's not more of them.
Well, it's because
the boomers
people,
are coming, Bob.
People with your attitude so far have not been on Hollywood's radar. You're just not part of the target demographic.
But
as we're getting there. We're getting there because we're aging.
We come, guys.
At some point, you know, like you say, Cape Crusaders are not going to make the money they did because there won't be as many kids out there to go see them.
I've said this before on this program, but I'll say it again. Back in the 90s, I want to say, the Jodie Foster film, The Accused, there's an incredibly intense, violent scene at the end of that film where she is violated atop
a pinball machine.
And I left that theater and thought, that is it. I am done. I can't take this anymore. I'm in a new place in my life. And from then on, when the violent stuff comes on, I like leave the room. I'm just a terrible baby about the whole thing, you know?
I can't watch surgeries and those kind of things on television. But a scene like The Accused, Steve, you're talking about a scene that was violent and hard to watch for a reason.
But you're paying.
But there's contrast that with all this mindless violence that our culture is just besotted
with. Well, we had this conversation about Hunger Games. I was just totally turned off.
I still haven't seen it because I just don't care
But the whole notion of paying money to watch that kind of thing strikes me as antithetical. I can't do it anymore. Don't want to go there.
But go back to the 80s or the late 70s in Hollywood's heyday, I think. Two of my favorite films of all time are Taxi Driver and Raging Bull.
Sure.
Two incredibly violent movies that say something.
I understand.
Our culture,
distinction you're making.
The people who were my age then, who were that, you know what I'm saying, that are now 20.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I understand the place for it. I'm just not sure on a Friday night after a long week work, I want to go see that anymore, no matter how good it is.
Right.
And
no,
I can't believe the market isn't exploding for what, you know, yours truly wants to see out there, Cynthia.
Steve, I can't right now think of the titles of some of the films, but I used to take my mom to the theater. and I knew exactly what she would like. She would have loved this movie. And we would sit there, and at the end she'd say, "Why don't they make movies like this anymore?"
You know,
I'd say, "Mom, you just saw one."
I'm here to say I'm man enough to acknowledge that you're comparing me to your mother, and I can handle it. I don't care anymore, because
right.
that's simply where I'm at in my life.
You
okay.
sound as fed up as the hero
yeah,
in one of the
go.
Movies we're talking
we
about
go.
In a minute.
Bob Butler, let's move on to God Bless America.
Here
divorced,
we go.
Angry man is on a mission to kill people who annoy him.
This is not your movie, let me tell you.
I'm on a roll.
This film was made by the former stand-up comic Bobcat Goldthwait, he of the Twisted Synapses, and he's actually a pretty decent filmmaker. He did one about 4 years ago called World's Greatest Dad with Robin Williams, which was a semi-brilliant black comedy. Well, black is the operative word here. This is not so much a movie as a primal scream of rage at the idiocy of our contemporary culture. It's about a man. He's 40-something. He's divorced. His wife is remarried. His kid hates him. He's just lost his job and been told he has a brain tumor. And he snaps, and he decides it's time to clean things up. And for all you Kardashian-loving, cell phone during the movie talking, rude right-wing radio hate vendors, this guy is on your case. Now, this is sort of a Bonnie and Clyde type thing, or maybe a Badlands thing, or a Bonnie and... Or maybe a Thelma and Louise thing. He hooks up with a teenage girl who's just as disaffected as he is, and they go out on a murder spree. Now, that sounds terrible, and it is. It's also, I thought, blisteringly funny for what they say about the low, low tide of American culture that we're experiencing right now. It's just got a savage, savage satire of all the things that a lot of us think are wrong with America. You want to hear something from it?
Yeah.
Okay, this is a clip where they're in a motel room. This is not a sexual relationship, let me hasten to add. And they're playing Russian roulette with a toy gun.
You know what I hate?
What?
I hate guys that say, "actually" all the time. Like, you're actually got a gun to your head. You're actually, you're actually still alive.
You know what I'll say? People who misuse the term literally. Here.
Literal people, I guess.
Okay. I know we're getting close.
Uh-huh. I hate guys that buy $100,000 cars and then drive them around 10 miles slower than the speed limit.
Ow! I hate guys who wear lady pants.
Lady pants?
Ah.
Whoa.
Okay.
I'm no mathematician, but my odds are not good. Well, Pythagoras, maybe time to die.
How'd that feel?
It felt good. It's a good night to die.
Frank, our semi-hero, is played by Joel Murray, who, if you remember the first season of Mad Men, was the poor, hapless drunkard who was actually thrown out of the firm for drinking, which on that series is quite an accomplishment.
Exactly.
The little girl, his teenage accomplice, Roxy, is played by Tara Lynn Barr. And, you know, the funny thing about this is the film actually generates a good deal of warmth between these two characters, total outsiders. Now, I'm not going to tell you it's a great movie, and Bobcat Goldthwait paints himself into a very bloody corner from which he cannot extricate himself. But if you just want to vent your spleen, this is the movie for you.
And if you're unapologetically liberal. I mean, the truth is, his targets are a Bill O'Reilly wannabe who says even pinheads, like O'Reilly does, these reality shows with spoiled teenagers,
and
Fred Phelps and his group, yeah. I mean, which to us in this area of the country is not an unwelcome sight, perhaps. But the Tea Party is blatantly targeted in all ways.
Although they have target practice, and he tells his little protege, "Boy, you're really shooting good." And she says, "I'm pretending the targets are the cast members of Glee."
Oh, okay. I missed that line.
Wow.
I thought it was redundant. After 30 minutes, we get the point. Okay. We've gone down the list of people we hate. And, you know, end of story. And I agree with Bob that he painted himself in a corner and he just couldn't get out of it.
But his targets are legit, especially the film's one thread really is this contestant who's auditioning for an American Idol-like show who's really terrible, and they make fun of him and even call him on the audition, "Are you mentally challenged? What's the deal?" which is part of the coarseness of our culture that we have seen, but yet the kid becomes a viral star, a viral video star at the same time. Our country doesn't know what to do with fame, its guns, its money, its time. And I think he's trying to say that, but it's not, you know, it's not a masterpiece.
We're
by
talking
any
about
means.
God Bless America. Do you recommend it then, Bob?
I do for a limited audience.
Cynthia, no.
No.
Steve
I'd
Walker?
Say no. No, no, okay. I can't put it on a recommend list.
Okay, Bob Butler, you're up next, too, with the film Keyhole.
All right, this is from one of my favorite indie filmmakers. I just wish I liked this movie more. Keyhole is from Guy Madden, the Canadian minimalist who a couple years ago had a brilliant documentary, a personal documentary called My Winnipeg about his hometown.
I went and saw that and walked out in half
did you?
An hour.
I thought it was really good.
Well, either you love Guy Madden or you don't.
Yeah.
Keyhole is basically a spoof of The Odyssey, believe it or not, set in the 1930s in a house. This house is invaded by a bunch of gangsters, the leader of which, Ulysses is his name, played by Jason Patrick, wants to reach his wife, who is apparently living up in the attic, or Attica, if you will, with her father, an aged naked man. The wife is played by
Isabella Rossellini.
Isabella Rossellini. Yeah. And as he moves through the house, he sort of gets memories jarred of his life. Now, here's the weird thing. The film is technically brilliant. Black and white photography, great handheld camera work, lighting that evokes this storm outside, not to mention a bunch of unseen cops that have surrounded the house. But despite that, it just didn't work for me. It never engaged me emotionally or intellectually. So
I don't know what the relationship is between Guy Madden and Isabella Rossellini, but she was also in the film that he did called The Saddest Music in the World, which was one of the strangest movies I've ever seen. And she's just very, you know.
But his movies aren't strange in a David Lynch kind of brilliantly strange way.
Well, I kept thinking that, though. I mean,
there's a Lynchian kind of.
The entire movie is like one of those Red Room scenes from the Twin Peaks movies.
Right.
Yeah.
I've just found it pretentious.
Yep,
and
it is.
Again, the black and white photography is really nice, but pretentious, incomprehensible. I had no idea what was going on. It jumped between reality, and then they'd have a scene where they'd say, okay, if you're dead, turn your face to the wall.
Yeah, and then the dead characters who've been shot by the cops have to leave the set.
Right. I mean, it's why? Mm. I just had a big why. And it's playing, if you're interested, at the Screenland at Crossroads, I believe.
I believe so.
Yeah. So thumbs down?
No, I'm afraid so.
Thumbs down, yeah. Steve Walker? Yeah.
Yeah. Thumbs down, but if you're interested in experimental black and white filmmaking, this is a movie you might want to see.
What's the clip we have from the film before we leave it completely?
I believe this is Isabella Rossellini cuddling with her agent,
naked
possibly
father.
Ghostly father. We're not sure what's going on there.
Are you having another nightmare?
No. It's all right. Just another drowning. Always the same girl.
Who is she?
I'm not sure. She won't let me save her.
Were you ever young, Father? When I was young, I used to think that I could save the day with the people I love. Well, I never saved anyone's day.
You haven't given up.
Well, I can't. I still have a son. You know, when you start having children, you're still always worried that something terrible might happen. Little that you know, you're the culprit of it.
Where's Chang?
You know, somewhere around here, I don't know. When I woke up, it wasn't here.
Kind of like an acid flashback or something.
I think I'm having one.
That's from the film Keyhole. Not a lot of good things to say about it here. If you're just joining us this morning, you're listening to Up to Date. We're talking about the newest and best indie films now showing. Cynthia Haynes is with us, Steve Walker, and Bob Butler. How about some films already open here? And we'll begin, Steve Walker, with Damsels in Distress.
Well, Damsels in Distress comes from director Whit Stillman. It's his first film in about 20 years. And he made a couple films about the Upper East Side preppies, young college students.
This is about
movie
what?
Is set at a fictitious Seven Oaks University, which is Ivy League-ish. It's a co-ed university. It's about this group of young women who kind of have a self-anointed role at the school to run a suicide prevention center, to comment on just how stinky and gross boys are, but yet they want to be in relationships, and they take this new student under their wing and proceed to chat nonstop for 90 minutes about all kinds of
weird things. It's not cinematic at all.
Oh, no.
Not at all.
And it's kind of like the story is sort of like Emma. People who take it upon themselves to be do-gooders, whether people want to be done good to or not. It stars Greta Gerwig, whom I really think is a promising actress, but she was in the
Greenberg.
Greenberg, yes. Yeah.
She was very good at that. You know who she reminded me of? Was Catherine Deneuve as a young woman. She has a beautiful face, and I was really kept thinking she reminds me of
someone. Do you think
she
was good in this, Bob?
I don't think anybody was good in this.
For what she was asked to do.
You guys are in tough moods here this week.
She's a very smug.
Make anybody
happy. The movie's smug. These characters are smugs. It's overwritten so much. But I want to just say, I think there's a good movie in here that Whit Stillman has choked the life out of.
You know what? It struck me as almost like a P.G. Wodehouse 20s comedy where you have these vaguely zany people on a college campus. The trouble is he's almost practicing Brechtian alienation. You don't end up liking any of these people.
No, not really.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, one example, Steve, is there's a character who's the girls talk about how stupid frat boys are, although their frat system is Roman. Is that real? Anyway, there's a kid named Thor who doesn't know his colors. Is that even possible? You know what I mean? That's not possible. But it's kind of that quirkiness
it's absurd. I mean, the whole film, the premise, the gals deal with the other kids on the campus who are affected with depression by having them either smell soap, fragrance, or dance.
Tap dance.
Specifically, And that's their...
Or eat donuts.
Yes.
Anyway, these characters are all really quirky and odd. The one saving grace is the actress Anna Lee Tipton, who people will remember from Crazy Stupid Love. She played the babysitter that had the big crush on Steve Carell. She's a fine. I think she's terrific. This scene is of the four girls. It's very early in the film. They're talking about their love-hate relationship with the boys as they're going to a frat party.
From Damsels in Distress.
Take Frank, my friend. He's not some cool, handsome, studly, macho type. No, not at all. I can't stand guys like that. He's more of a sad sack, really, wouldn't you say?
Definitely. What is a sad sack?
A loser.
You like losers?
Very much so. Do you know what's the major problem in contemporary social life?
What?
The tendency, very widespread, to always seek someone cooler than yourself. It's always a stretch, often a big stretch. Why not find someone who's frankly inferior?
Someone like Frank.
Yes, it's more rewarding and, in fact, quite reassuring.
You mean someone you can really help, not just thinking of yourself?
Yes, that's it, precisely, but without the goody-goody implications. Our aspirations are pretty basic. Take a guy who hasn't realized his full potential or doesn't even have much, and then help him realize it or find more. There's enough material here for a lifetime of social work.
That's from Damsels in Distress, and so far our critics had nice things to say about Patty Schemmel, Hit So Hard, The Life and Near Death Story of Patty Schemmel, and Best Exotic, Marigold Hotel, but not much good about anything else here today. Steve Walker, you're up next with We Have a Pope.
We do, and this is a good film. Bob and Cynthia haven't seen it, but it's... From Italian director Nanni Moretti, it opens in the Vatican. There's church officials, cardinals gathered from all over the globe because they need to elect a new pope. The last one has passed away, apparently. And as you think, okay, this movie's really solemn. It's all very serious and rigorous.
That's what I thought it was when I first saw the preview, yeah.
And then they start to vote, and you see subtitles of their inner thoughts, and all these guys voting are saying, oh, God, please not me. Please, not me. And so this guy is elected, played by the great Italian actor Michele Piccoli?
Yeah.
Who's 90, I believe, gives a great performance. But anyway, he's elected.
He's age 90, literally?
Yes, yeah. Mm-hmm. He's elected. It's seconds before he goes out onto the balcony to greet the masses, and he has a nervous breakdown or a panic attack sort of thing. and he can't do it.
Not that I would blame him.
Well, yeah, it's a big responsibility from what I hear. But he can't do it, so they call in a psychiatrist to try to get him just up to the point where he can go out and greet the masses who've been gathered. And then they gather and gather for days. And he ends up donning street clothes and going out into the streets. And he can because nobody knows who he is. They don't know he's the new pope. So he goes to a pub and he goes and hangs out with his acting troupe doing a Chekhov play. It's really funny. And I really enjoyed it. And I recommend it highly.
The director plays the therapist, right?
Yes, the director plays the therapist. Another bit of the humor. He sits down for his first session and all the other cardinals who have voted this man pope are standing around. And he's like, we have confidentiality or anything? And they're like, no, of course you don't. But it's very funny, and it was a great little surprise. It's playing at the Rio in Overland Park.
Italian with subtitles.
Yeah. Okay. Did you see it?
No, well, I'd like to, though.
Yeah. Okay. That's We Have a Pope. How about some update, folks, on some events going on here in town? Bob Butler, what's going on at the library these days?
Oh, boy. We're starting our off-the-wall film series. Every third Friday, all summer long, we're showing rock and roll movies on the roof of the library downtown.
That sounds like fun.
The series, all right, think fast. The series is called Procreation, Pharmaceuticals, and Backbeat-Driven Blues-Based Music. Who can translate that for me?
Is it from a movie?
It means sex, drugs, and rock and roll. All right. Anyway, we're starting out with Hedwig and the Angry Inch on the 18th. The show starts about 8:45 every night. It's free. Come, bring your folding chairs, blankets, enjoy the night air. Special deal this year, guys. Harry's Country Club, you know that little place down in the city market? If you come to the movie, you get a coupon good for 25% off all your food and drink at Harry's. You can use it any night of any of these screenings. So you can go before the show, after the show. It's a great tie-in.
Bob, I can see the roof of the downtown library from my apartment. I'm just wondering, where do you see where do you put the movie up?
It's up on that white wall people come out the doors of from the fifth floor.
So it faces?
It faces Harry's.
West?
It faces west.
I may be able to watch it from my apartment.
Well, come on down. Cheapskate.
I can play it on my stereo at the home because I own the movie, too. So.
And we're also we're still in the midst of our Vincent Minnelli film series on Saturday afternoons and Monday evenings. It has been really successful. We're getting a lot of people to come, and Vincent Minnelli, of course, is one of the greats. Tonight, for instance, or tomorrow, we're showing The Bandwagon, and on Monday, The Bad and the Beautiful. So get down there.
Okay. How about the Tivoli Performing Arts schedule?
Yes, the Royal Ballet performance of The Wayward Daughter will be Wednesday, May the 16th, and also Sunday, May the 20th at 1:30 in the afternoon. Steve, you've been to some of these performances, and they do such a terrific job. I think there was a two-part series in the New York Times about this new experience of experiencing theater and opera in movie theaters.
I haven't done the ballet or the opera. It's just not my deal. But related to that, remember how I went on and on about Danny Boyle's Frankenstein? Yes. It's coming back for four performances at the Tivoli in June. Go to their website. Do not miss it.
Are
and
people
it will change
to this new idea?
It's huge.
Audiences, there's people showing up, and there's audiences here. Yeah.
Seeing Frankenstein will change your mind about, can theater really work on a movie screen? And hopefully we may have a show before the next one, and we'll remind people about Frankenstein. Mm-hmm.
Also, The Artist is being re-released in movie theaters at the AMC, the Cinemark on the Plaza, and also at the Leawood. This is the film that won the best.
And it's being re-released. Why?
Because no one went to see it the first time around, and it was in so few theaters. We talked about it. But,
and now the buzz is happening again? No, I don't understand that at all.
I think this is wishful.
It's like two weeks before the DVD release is probably why they're doing it.
Could be. Also, the re-release of the first film to win a Best Picture Oscar, the silent World War I drama, released in 1927, Wings, has been re-released. It's been restored. It'll be May 2nd and the 16th at Cinemark, Palace on the Plaza.
That's weird. I hadn't heard that.
I think it's part of the celebration of Paramount Pictures' 100th anniversary or something, and they thought.
And
it's a good movie. I mean, this is I really think it's worth seeing on the big screen.
There's some other coming attractions on the way here in just a few seconds we have left. What would you guys point to that are reasons to live for moviegoers here coming
Monsieur
up?
Lazare is a fantastic
movie
about teaching and children and love. It is just – it's opening at the Tivoli June the 1st.
And you'd really recommend that.
Oh,
very much.
Without,
yeah,
I saw that.
It was Canada's entry in the foreign film.
And Bob, you saw Sound of My Voice.
I did. It's a nice thriller with co-written and starring Britt Marlin, who was in Another Earth, another indie favorite from earlier this year. And
Darling Companion.
Darling Companion, Lawrence Kasdan. We haven't heard much from him lately. It's a great, great show.
Okay, the three of you had to pick your three to see. What would you recommend to our listening audience for three films you might suggest they go spend some
time
with?
This is no surprise. Best Exotic Marigold Hotel, I would start with. Jiro, Dreams of Sushi, still holding on. It's at Screenland Crown Center, and So Is a Separation.
Mm-hmm. Best Exotic Marigold Hotel, A Separation, Jiro, Dreams of Sushi.
Separation, Jeff Who Lives at Home, and Just to Be Contrary, God Bless America.
Yeah, there you go. Those are indie, doc, and foreign film critics Bob Butler, Cynthia Haynes, and Steve Walker. Thank you all very much for taking time with us once again. You'll find a list of the films we talked about today, as well as their favorites, now showing on area screens. You can find it at kcur.org. Don't forget to follow KCUR on Facebook and this program on Twitter. We're at KCUR Up to Date. Monday on the program, we'll talk about the information diet. Our music is by Bobby Watson and the UMKC Conservatory of Music Concert Jazz Band. We had help this week from KCUR's Danny Alexander, Kim Noble, Maria Carter, and Bill Anderson. The show is produced by Steven Steigman. Have a great weekend, all. I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and you are up to date.